C1SP. Number 18A.
I want to remind you that I have foreseen two other talks on October the 4th and 5th, at which weekend I will take the chapter on animal magnetism unmasked. And I think what I will do is to use the Saturday afternoon already as an introduction into the chapter on animal magnetism, so that those who can make it to come also on Saturday afternoon, I think they will get a better grasp of the chapter. And then the last talk will be on November 29th and 30th. At that weekend, I just want to recapitulate all what we have done during the last 2 years, and to sum it up so that we have a better view, a bird's-eye view on what we have been doing and the purpose for what we were doing it. So I think that last weekend would be only advisable to attend if one can attend it Saturday and Sunday, because the whole thing will be one thing. Now, we did yesterday the first and second part of spiritualism, and today we'll do the third. Now, what have we done yesterday? We have seen in the first part that we have first to analyze to ourselves what are the identities of being which are real. What are the really real identities of being? And the text has shown that only that which is of the nature of God, and therefore is God created and God unfolded and God identified and God exalted and God confirmed and God blessed, that only that constitutes the true identities of being. Whereas all that which starts with the human mind, with our thinking, close your eyes and you may see, and then the whole universe of mortal illusions are coming to the front. That all that which starts with the human mind, that is not the real creation. That all that which starts with the human mind, which the five physical senses can behold, that is not the real universe of God. Having shown that these two universes never mingle in any shape or form, then we have considered the second part of spiritualism, where the claims of spiritualism are raised, which say, I can disprove the statements of the first part. I can show you that through certain phenomena, some unusual, supernatural phenomena, spiritualism says I can disprove those statements in the first part. And in order to disprove it, they rely on the physical senses, which again are analyzed through science to be nothing else than the outward channel of human beliefs. In that second part, science must come in and must show why these so-called proofs of spiritualism are not conclusive. Science must dispel the mysteries of everything that is phenomenal, that is so-called supernatural, it must solve those mysteries. And in that second part, the main trend was that science reduces the testimony of the physical senses back to its origin and uncovers the origin of all those spiritualistic phenomena as beliefs. Showing then that everything which has its cause in belief, or no matter if it is an individual human belief, or if it is a collective or universal or cosmic belief, if it is belief, then its phenomena can never be true. No matter how wonderful they may seem on the surface, no matter how spectacular they may seem to the physical senses or to the uninspired, uninstructed mentality. In that second part, the science uncovers that only that which has its origin in mind, in the divine mind, that only that which can be traced back to divine mind as the cause and the origin of anything, that only that can be called true and lasting and eternal. So, having made this clear, that we cannot rely on the so-called objective reality which is seen through the five physical senses, showing that all that so-called objective reality is just the outward objective manifestation of a subjective state of mind, and analyzing the nature of that subjective mind, we come to the discovery what is true and what is untrue. If that subjective mentality is of the nature of mortal mind, then its wonders are delusions. But if that subjective mentality is nurtured and supplied by the nature of the divine mind, is born in that divine mind, then its manifestation and phenomena are real and are real wonders of divinity. In the last subject, she has made that very clear, showing with the example of eloquence, that eloquence by itself does not prove anything, that eloquence by itself must first be analyzed, and we must first ask, where does it come from? Does it come from erudition through tutoring and scholarly education, or does it come from so-called spirits which are shown to be only the loosening of mortal belief? Or has eloquence its origin in the divine mind, then it re-echoes the strains of truth and love. It re-echoes always the standard of what is true, and always re-echoes therefore love, namely the real wonder of a truth. So the second part asks us not to be fooled by phenomena, and ask us to use the method of science to discover what lies at the origin of such so-called phenomena or manifestation or demonstration or whatever they may be called, and shows that only is substantial, which is born in mind. That one of the last marginal headings was mind is substance. But only that is real which has its basis in the divine mind. Whereas she shows that all those wonders which we perceive of in dreams and where we work wonder in dreams, that has also its origin in mind, but not in the divine mind, in the mortal mind, in the human mind, in the illusive mind, and so its wonders are no wonders at all. They are what she calls just delusions. The second part, therefore, is a great challenge to our present concept of mentality. And it asks us to see that we never deal really with a material universe. That matter doesn't matter really. That what matters are the cause of everything, and therefore deals with the question of beliefs and says that it is futile to believe in a belief. What does she show through the seventh subject about this futility to believe? She says that in the first subject that it is futile to believe what people say, what human opinions say and testify, what opinions they express. It's futile to believe that. Mind is the only informator. In the second subject, she shows that it is completely futile to believe in the cooperation of mind and matter. Those spiritualistic beliefs show that mind and matter cooperate. But it is a belief, and that belief never leads to anything which is true and lasting. The third, she shows that it is futile to believe in sense testimony as a proof for anything. We shouldn't believe in a sense testimony. We should believe to spiritual sense. Then in the fourth, she shows that it's quite futile to believe in one's own beliefs, in mortal mind reading, which only reads its own beliefs. We believe so much in our own beliefs. We believe so much in the way we are doing things. We believe so much in the way we are looking at things. It's a very tenacious belief, but a very destructive or non-progressive, I don't know what you call that, progressive belief. It never leads us further. The moment we come into the routine of trusting one's own beliefs and one's own way of doing things, we stop progress. And so it says, don't believe in your own beliefs. Always go back to the divine mind and interpret things always anew from the point of divine mind. Then in the fifth subject she asks us not that it is quite futile to believe that there are such things as extraordinary phenomena. That extraordinary phenomena are no more extraordinary than the usual phenomena. That the only difference lies that common phenomena arise from voluntary and conscious thought, whereas so-called extraordinary phenomena arise from involuntary thought. Then she goes on to a most important point, the sixth, where she shows that it is quite futile, really, to believe that that of which the human mind is conscious of, that is the whole of the human belief. That's one point which we should remember more and more, that of which we are consciously conscious of a human belief is only a small part of the whole gamut of human mortal beliefs that try to convulse our body, our personality, our business, our nation, our family, our happiness and everything, that tries to disrupt and to bring into disorder our whole human existence. And lastly, in the seventh, she shows that it is quite futile to believe that everything which we call wonders, that they are wonders of God, and shows that that which the human mind calls wonders may in most cases be no wonders at all, but that they are just delusions of uninstructed, unenlightened mortal thought. So these seven subjects are so important. You see, they all show that these claims which are brought forth, the claims of beliefs, that they are really beliefs in which the common mortal believes in. That's usually the universe in which a mortal lives. He lives in that universe where he believes and takes it very serious and as very serious what somebody says. Takes it very serious that spirit and matter must cooperate in the universe. Takes it very serious what the five physical senses tells us. Takes it very serious what are the common concepts of humanity. Take it very serious whenever something supernatural happens. And it takes it very unserious and shuts one's eye too much to all the subconscious mortal beliefs that try to make a fool of men and close his eyes to it. And takes as wonders whatever the human mind has not been instructed to analyze and to uncover, and believes in wonders and devotes himself or herself to wonders that are no wonders at all. That thing is the whole mental universe in which we live, in which a mortal, uninstructed by science lives. And that's the universe of discord which really convulses at every moment his whole human existence. Against that, we must take the stand of science and see through these beliefs and come back to rock bottom facts. To those facts which are based on an understanding of mind and spirit and soul and principle, life and truth and love. Then if we base ourselves on that foundation in our mind, you see, in our mind, base ourselves on that foundation, then our mind is divine mind-like. Then our mind is in accord, in rapport, in communion with the divine mind. And such a mentality is spiritual and real and substantial. Then we can say mind is substance. I want to read to you a passage from Mr. Dorley's practice book on this question of being aware, being much more aware that the subconscious beliefs are in a majority, and that the subconscious belief, of which we usually are not conscious, are a much bigger claim on the mortal man than we usually think. He says, in speaking about the mental remember that what you think you are as a mortal is only a small percentage of what mortal mind says what you are. What you as a mortal know about yourself is your conscious mentality, and it may be just 10% of what mortal mind is saying about you. The other 90% is unconscious mortal mentality. What the carnal mind is saying about you, which includes all the carnal mind's beliefs that go back for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. The way to deal with that accumulation is to deal with mortal mind as the one basic error. See, he shows there in the chapter on practice this very point, which is the pith of the second part, and which really is the essential factor for our happiness and freedom. That's on page 94 and 95. And a similar reference will be on page 135. Page 94, 95, and also another reference on page 135. See, that's what here in this second part Mrs. Eddy also shows, that those buried secrets, see, they can be brought back into consciousness. And from the psychologies, especially a special branch of psychology, I don't know what you call it, Tiefenpsychologie. You wouldn't know either, Harold. No. Well, it's that psychology which deals with the subconscious in the human mind. See, they say the same today, that the subconscious is really the dangerous part of the human consciousness. And that, as we said, not only individual beliefs, but collective beliefs, national beliefs, racial beliefs, religious beliefs, then universal beliefs, the belief in death, the belief in birth, the belief in disease, the belief in accident, all these, you see, are universal beliefs. Cosmic beliefs, the beliefs that we are under the influence of the stars or of the moon, that we drink more when the moon is full and so on, and other things when the moon is full. These are all cosmic beliefs. And these beliefs, they are just as tangible to mortal belief as the conscious individual beliefs. But if we are not aware of all the claims of beliefs, as John Dawley says, then we are naturally in danger that these beliefs have a good target with us, that we put ourselves up as a target for all these beliefs. And so the only method to deal with them is to deal with the cosmic, the universal, the collective, the national, and the individual beliefs, is just to go back to the one which is all-inclusive, the divine mind. See, if we go back to the divine mind and then stay there in our consciousness and begin to reflect that divine mind as spirit, then little by little, more and more, something is identified within us which is of the nature of that divine mind, and we get a certain immunity of soul. And in that measure, as we get that certain immunity of soul, then wicked minds can no more try out new methods on us and work evil on us, but then we work good. Then we are waterproof or foolproof, Well, we say waterproof, you see, sometimes in German. Foolproof against the attacks of mortal mind. And then we can express life, fatherhood to the world, you see, and establish the truth in any situation. And in that way, really bring about the fulfillment of the true idea of mind. That's what she says here in this chapter. You see, again, what we said yesterday, it is asking us to hitch our wagons to the divine mind and not to the human beliefs. It asks us that our mentality is lined up with the perfect concept of mind. And that is what she is showing us in the third part. In the third part now, after she has shown in the second part the two standpoints, the two origin of mentality, that mentality can be of the origin of mortal mind, which is always bringing something about which is erroneous, or that mentality can be on the nature of divine mind, which is always establishing the truth of creation. Naturally then, as the third part, she comes and says, therefore, line up your mentality with the divine mind. And the third part is a big presentation of a method to take hold of that mind in our mind, which is God, so as to be divine mind-minded. To be spiritually minded is life. Then we have asked the true God and not the wizards. And having asked the true gods, we have kept the commandments, and that scriptural note become true. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that keepeth my commandments shall never see death. It always brings life. So, we will go through this third part and see how, through lining up our mentality with the divine mind, we are freed from the beliefs of mortal mind, and how that unfoldment and development of thought leads us to what she calls final spiritualization. The third part is a presentation of the scientific method which to use in order to attain final spiritualization. We see now it's spiritualization of the mind. See, we see now that in the second part she has reduced the sense testimony to mentality and has shown mentality is the cause. Now, the salvation for us lies that we have a mentality which is not lined up with beliefs, but that we have a mentality which is in rapport with the divine mind. And that is what she deals in the third subject, and third part. The third part has seven big subjects, and these seven are built up in the days of creation order. But I shall not make a point out of the subtones, because here and there one may have a bit difficulty in seeing the subtones, and some other place they are just as obvious as they can be. But I don't want that your study is sidetracked with the interest of finding tones and subtones, but I want that you are free, that you get your salvation, that you will never forget this weekend. That's what I would like to accomplish. That from now on you will see the way of salvation definitely. And that you have a feeling that really now is the day of salvation. That nothing can hinder us now to take the standpoint of the divine mind and look at our universe from the standpoint of divine mind instead of the standpoint of human beliefs. And in order to be one with that divine mind, that third part is written. And that third part starts with the first subject, which I have epitomized by saying that the point of departure for spiritualization, the whole third part has to do with spiritualization. Mind says the point of departure for this spiritualization lies in admitting and acknowledging that man is God's own likeness.